Hello, listeners, and welcome to yet another edition of In Conversation with Ashwin, and this is your host, Ashwin. Today we have a very interesting guest. I, in fact, recorded this podcast in person. The theme was movies and inspiration, and the guest for this show kind of fits the description perfectly. 20 years old, Kishan Das is almost like a celebrity already, with 16,500 followers on Instagram. He's a part of a film franchise which has 2.3 lakh subscribers on YouTube. He's super funny, and I cannot stress that more. He's an aspiring actor, and he's done a bunch of theater, YouTube, movie reviews, dub smashes, and other things on the internet that have entertained a lot of people. In today's topic, we dive into his early childhood, how Kishan confirms that he's not a stand-up comedian, how that's a misunderstood perception that people have of him, his funny stories on script writing, why slapstick humor is what works with audiences, why mimicry is not stand-up. Kishan talks to us about his job at Fully Filmy, which is a film merchandising company, his content creation, the motivation behind it, how YouTube stats helped him to analyze content and take corrective measures accordingly to target larger audiences. His talk at a recent TEDx event, yes, he was called to speak at a TEDx event recently, and he gives us his brief about that, how he as a 20-year-old makes enough money on YouTube. In fact, YouTube does pay well, and people have always like said, oh, YouTube doesn't make you enough money, but he bashes that thought away. And yeah, and a couple of other things that we speak about are the 2 to 3 guidelines that Kishan uses to review his movies. We speak about Marisol, Padmavat, and other controversy-struck movies, and Kishan's take on it. We also make fun of the CBFC, like they don't make fun of themselves. Balaji Nilani, Prasun Joshi, we cover a lot of movie talk, a lot of inspiration talk. So without further ado, presenting to you my wide-ranging conversation with almost celebrity Kishan Das. Enjoy. Welcome to the show, Kishan. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
Yes, no problem.
So yeah, first question, right, diving right into it. Tell us a little about your early childhood and how that has ended up having an influence on the person that you've become and are becoming.
This is such a serious question. Okay, fine. Okay, I'm going to try to be serious throughout. So basically, my parents had a divorce when I was very young. Basically, okay. I think I was a year old or something like that. Yeah. So my mom brought me up. So I've been with my mom for most of my time. So the thing is, I've had basically everything I wanted to do was looking at her and trying to
emulate her.
Yeah. So she used to act in serials when I was very young. So we didn't have a caretaker at home throughout. So I used to go to her serial sets and do my my homework and study and all.
Wow.
So since when I was a kid, I've had that atmosphere around me, looking at people carrying lights and shots, and it used to be very. I used to be amazed by how people do this, because it takes so much time to get 1 second right, and yeah. I always wondered why they put in so much effort. Now obviously I know, but then.
Yeah.
I think that amusement really brought me the interest and the liking I have towards cinema. So that's where it all started. And other than that, like I've said in many other places, my family is very supportive. So they never tell me not to do something. They always tell me to give it a shot. So I just had like one bunch of people who kept pushing me towards stuff. And yeah. Then, yeah, now I'm just doing something that I like.
Yeah. And do you see this as something that you will continue doing, because I know you're doing a lot of stand-up, a lot of acting.
No, that's the thing that people actually get wrong about me. I don't do a lot of stand-up.
The thing is,
I don't have the balls to do stand-up. I cannot do stand-up comedy. I've done stand-up comedy twice in my life.
Yeah.
The first time I bombed majorly. Basically,
yeah.
it was a monologue event at MCC.
Okay.
And I didn't have a monologue prepared. And I just thought, okay, I'll do something impromptu, made fun of a few IIT kids. Nobody laughed.
Yeah.
I felt really bad. So I was like, okay, fine. Okay, chuck it. And then I never thought I'd do stand-up comedy again, but we went to Mount Carmel when Loyola, we had like this cultural thing.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we just thought of Mount Carmel and we left overnight. We didn't really think about the events we'd participate in. And
yeah.
There it was Bangalore, they had really messed up events which none of us could participate in. I think the only thing I qualified to participate in was like Rangoli, and I don't think Rangoli is something I'm going to win.
No, so, what do you mean by messed up events? Like, okay, the events.
Yeah, were... so here it's pretty obvious. You have Shipwreck, you have Channel Surfing. There they have like underground dance, on stage dance, and I didn't understand. And this one event that I really wanted to go to, which was basically a psychology theater. So they'll give you a few psychological like terms and disorders, and you have to bring that in a, like an impromptu sketch. So that we did, that we won. But I needed a certificate which proved that I was there for me to get my OD.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was stand-up comedy. And the Loyola Union was like, okay, obviously they want to encourage people as much as they can because they need to win events. So they sent me, they're like, okay, go. I perform, okay. I think in my defense, the crowd wasn't very bad. But all my friends tell me the crowd was really dumb, which is why they laughed at all your jokes. But then, basically, I made a lot of jokes. To be specific, I made a certain...
Did you take a dig at the college itself?
Yeah, I made fun of my own college. Okay. And it took me a while to realize that they were a Christian college too. So I'm making a lot of Roman Catholic jokes because I'm obviously from Loyola. So the problem was, after a point, I started making political jokes. I realized people were taking videos. So at the end of the day, I had to go to everybody and tell them to delete it. And I made a joke about a certain chief minister who was unwell.
Yeah.
And then she died.
Okay. So yeah. So no stand-up here.
No stand-up. I do a lot of theater. I did a lot of theater. Now I'm planning to do a lot of theater again.
Yeah.
Hopefully if I get the time to.
Yeah.
And otherwise, I'm on YouTube right now. So I do a lot of YouTube videos.
Yeah.
And I review films like you mentioned before. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Got it. How does college fit in into this background? Like, you go to Loyola, don't you?
I finished college last year.
Yeah.
College was weird. The only thing that kept us going, I think you've heard this line. I think everyone's heard this line too many times. But friends, the only people that got me.
Yeah, as cliched, but the most true thing.
I swear, yeah. College was really messed up. Like, I didn't get into trouble a lot in school, but I got into trouble a lot in college for things I didn't even expect, like leaving my bag unnoticed, unattended. Yeah, like the first exam I wrote in Loyola, there's something called a student's counter. Do you go to Loyola?
Yeah.
Okay, you have the student common room where you go and leave your bag.
Yeah.
So I didn't, like, my department, you know, the Viscom department is on the other end. So I didn't have time to go and leave my bag in the common room. So someone made this beautiful newspaper piece of a table and a person, all made it newspaper, which was really good. I don't know who made it.
Yeah.
But I left my bag underneath that. And a lot of juniors, like a lot of people in my batch saw it and they're like, okay, this guy seems smart, we'll put our bags there too. And by the time I finished my exam, took my bag, it was destroyed, the newspaper thing. And then they called us and it became like a big issue. So I kept getting into trouble, which is something that I don't usually do.
Yeah.
So college wasn't like a fun experience, but it got me like ready for life. Like, okay, this is what life is going to throw at you. Keep expecting shit from all directions.
Yeah.
So then, third year, I didn't attend too much of class because I was working part-time already then.
Yeah.
So I attended enough to
You were working with Fully Filming?
With Fully Filming. So my last semester, I was working with them.
Okay.
So
and
I just
then,
maintained...
And then you started out full-time.
Yeah.
Right.
So I just... like handled that 80% attendance thing and I just went and did all my other shit. But actually Loyola kind of changed my life. I know I never thought I'd say this, but it's like what the professors say, we won't teach you shit, there's shit around, just pick it up and put it in your basket.
Yeah.
That's what Loyola taught me.
That's good to know. But yeah, I just thought you'd do stand up, but anyway, the theater and everything that you do, right? I feel like it requires a high capacity for shame. What do you do when people don't find you funny? And there's always these 2-3 people in the crowd who are kind of ridiculing you.
Yeah, so in my case, it was the entire audience. So I think it's worse than death. If there's something worse than death, it's bombing on stage. Because,
I swear.
You know, they're looking at you and they're expecting, like, you can see the disappointment in
their faces. Yeah, because when you're in your sets or when you're doing your recordings or when you're doing your rehearsals, you're just focused on nailing the dialogues.
Yeah.
Right? But when you're live and there's eyeballs at you, that's when there's another dimension. And how do you handle that pressure? Apart from that, there's always these cheap comments that everybody makes.
So initially criticism wasn't something that I was very good at. I wasn't good at accepting criticism. I was just always worried about what they saw in me and why they talk about me that way. There's a reason I don't do stand-up comedy, which is what you just stated. I'm really scared about what people think. I am very shy. The thing is, there's a period between you like deciding to do something and getting on stage, right? Like getting on stage literally, that is my shy period. Once I get on stage, something kicks in and I really have to do something. Like I know that this is my like danger mode going on in my head, so I need to say something.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's very scary. I'm just as scared as anybody else to get on stage because there's a lot online. And especially when people know who you are, they expect something from you and you don't want to let them down, obviously.
Sure.
So that is one thing. I think the hardest experience that I've had was we did this campus theater initiative with Priya Shakti. So I was heading the Loyola Theatre Society then and we had to come up with a play. And I was the second most senior person in the theater group. And as another guy, Akib, I don't know if you're listening to this, he's a stand-up comedian now, by the way, which is really cool. So, we sat and wrote a script. And how we wrote the script is the most... I just hope that someone has a recording of all those days, because we just sit around and think of random stuff. The first script we wrote was about stupid superpowers. Like, we saw this 9-gag post about superheroes with the worst superpowers, like instant hair fall and bullet attraction. So, basically, someone shoots a bullet, you attract the bullet, stuff like that. So, it's really stupid. So, we wrote a play about that. And then halfway through the play, we realized it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
And this wasn't some play we could just scrap, because it was a paid show. So we had to put something out. So we came up with a random story, and we added a lot of racist jokes into it, and we put up a play.
Damn.
So one day before the play, we rehearsed at my house. So we invited my mom over to watch the play. And she saw the play, and she didn't laugh at places we thought she'd laugh for.
Yeah.
And that's when we got really tense. And see, stand-up is one thing. You go on stage, you say something, jokes work, jokes don't work. It's subjective.
Yeah.
But here you have to make people laugh because they're paying money to
see you.
And then we had like a lot of stuff that night. We had to change a lot. And the one thing that I've realized is slapstick humor is safer because suppose someone says a smart joke.
Yeah.
You get it, you laugh. Some people who get it, they'll just be like, okay, fine. But slapstick humor has this thing where it just, people laugh without even knowing that they laugh. It's something that we've been tuned because of Bollywood and Hollywood. The main thing they focus on is slapstick humor. They don't care about smart humor.
True.
Guy gets hit.
It's like leave your brains at home.
Yeah.
And
have you heard of Goundamani and Senthil?
Yes, I have.
Goundamani and Senthil, the entire thing was slapstick humor.
Yeah.
So I think Nagesh, the legend. So I think we're tuned to respond to slapstick humor.
What's your kind of humor? Do you like slapstick, or do you like intellectual, or a combination of both?
I think I just end up doing slapstick comedy. This is one occasional like smart joke. But the thing is, I can't write jokes. This is one more reason why I don't do stand-up. Even the one at Bangalore was very impromptu. I just took the mic and said whatever I thought of.
But but the thing is about stand-up, sorry to cut you off, but just don't want to lose this thought. Thing about stand-up, I've realized is from what I've been reading, I haven't like really gone on stage and tried to be funny, because I'm not a funny person, and it doesn't come naturally to me. But the ones that I've read, right, stand-up comedians, they say it takes a lot of practice. Like you need to fail like multiple times, and then you'll end up making. And there's 1,000 stages in the world, right?
Right.
You can keep going one after the other, and your reputation is at stake for sure when you're trying to do something. So have you ever explored the dimension of stand-up, and do you want to build on it?
No, the thing is, like you said, I've always been scared. My friend Akib, I just spoke about, he used to call me for a lot of open mics when he was starting. He said, just come and give it a shot. But I was always afraid because, I have a certain kind of... I have a name, like, in the YouTube thing that people know I exist. I don't have, like, one fan following, but they know that this guy exists. He does his shit. I don't want to put...
That's Kishan being extremely...
No. What I'm saying, I don't want to put that on the line. I don't see a reason why I should.
Yeah, fair enough.
I've seen a lot of actors, too.
Yeah.
They'll be good character artists or good comedians, and then they'll want to be an actor. People around them will tell them, you know what, you should become an actor.
Yeah.
But I think everybody has this one voice inside that they should listen to. Like, I can do stand-up comedy. I'm sure, let's say out of 10 events, I'm sure I'll be funny in one. But I don't think that's something
that's
that...
worth the...
Yeah.
Also, I think the hours that you're spending on what you really want to nail, it's
exactly.
better to really invest your energy and time.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's one thing that I'm sure I won't be doing.
Oh, fair enough. That's what I've found, like stand-up comedy, the whole concept is extremely unusual to me. Like, it's like the expectation is out there, you have to make us laugh, and that is extremely huge as like the pressure to take something.
And
like
there's one thing in Chennai, for them stand-up comedy means a completely different thing. Stand-up comedy is mimicry in Chennai. So I'm being very serious. The thing is, even if you go for culturals and all, like in college level, you say a stand-up comedy event, I have friends who have written sets and gone, but there'll be guys who do mimicry, because if you look at every stand-up comedy show in the history of Tamil cinema in Tamil entertainment, it's always been mimicry. They'll come and they'll speak like different characters, they'll get like a concept, and then they'll just mimic all these characters and find like a way to end that concept.
Yeah.
That's how it's always been. They've never had the idea of stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
It could also be, they'd be like, orthar irundhaare, avar idhu pannaare, blah, 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 this happened, done. Nobody talks about their life. It's never that. If you look at Kenny Sebastian, Kanan Gill, all of them, they talk about experiences, which is what makes it funny.
Correct.
That's never been there.
And I guess humor from experience is always solid, because it's honest, and you can't go wrong with the script, because you've experienced
it. And it's detailed also, everything that... So, when people say stand-up comedy in Chennai, they don't really think about talking about your experience or anything about it. They just think it's mimicry.
Yeah.
So, I think that idea needs to change here. Yeah. I think eventually it'll happen, but that change is going to be... It has to be good. Yeah.
Got it. Let's take your recommendations on a movie. What is one movie that you would definitely recommend a friend to watch and why?
If one is too hard, you can go with two.
Yeah, okay, I'll tell you one thing. I'll just say one thing before that. The thing is, I watch a lot of English films, but I don't really talk about English films.
Yeah.
Because there's one thing I learned from my boss, fully for me. He told me one thing which really made me think. It said, we look at Hollywood to get gangster films and concepts of films in Indian cinema, but we fail to notice a lot of stories that we have around us. Like, if you take Tamil cinema last year, there were so many stories about, like, concepts that we'd see in Hollywood films, but not about things that we'd see around us. Like, whatever film was made about things we see around us worked really well. So I think that's one thing that we need to look. And for me, my close friend circle, they don't watch Tamil films at all. So they watch a lot of English films, they watch Hindi films, they watch like the occasional big Tamil film that I tell them to like go watch, because okay, they're like, okay, this guy's telling us so much, might as well go watch it. So that's the feeling I have. And I think last year, I think Vikram Vedha is definitely something that people need to go
watch.
I
like that movie.
Yeah, because
Madhavan and Vikram Seth.
And Vijay Sethupathi.
Yeah, Vijay Sethupathi, sorry.
So that's one. And Aruvi also was a beautiful film.
Yeah,
so
Aruvi
I think
good.
More than Hollywood films, I think Hollywood films have their own audience and they promote it well enough. At least you're aware of that film. But a lot of regional films, have you seen Managaram? It released last year. So Managaram was Tamil's first hyperloop story, a hyperlink story, basically where they link multiple storylines and they eventually have like one setup and one dramatic climax type. So that was really interesting. I really liked that film. But the thing is, there's so many films that come out like this which people don't really know about.
Yeah.
So that, I think, Managaram, there's a film called Dhiran that came out last year with Karthi.
Yeah.
It was based on a real story, like a true life incident.
Heard that.
So that film was great. So I think there are a lot of local talents and films that we need to like encourage and tell people to watch, because eventually that's where tomorrow I'm entering the industry. I want to make films like that. I want to make films about stories around us, not about stories that happen elsewhere.
Exactly. Again, so, coming back to the point on honesty about really, if you've seen things around you, then the detail that you will and the effort that you will put into making the movie will be extremely genuine, and that will come out.
Yeah. Have you seen this movie called Pudupete?
It's
a Dhanush film.
It's probably embarrassing, guys, I have watched a few Tamil movies, just can't like go back to back on the names, but I haven't watched Pudupettai.
Okay, I'll give you a better example. So example, there's a movie called Nayagan that came out. Have you heard of Nayagan? Is basically like a Godfather inspired film, which happened in India. So Maniratnam directed the film. It's based on this guy called Varadaraja Mudaliar. I don't know if it's a official movie about his life, but it's loosely based on that character. So imagine Godfather in a more localized format set for Bombay. I think that was a really nice attempt, because okay, even if you take concepts from there, it's a movie that
you've localized.
Yeah. And do you watch Jigardanda?
Yeah, I
like Jigardanda, because
it was
purely about people there. I'm sure people from Madurai would have watched the movie and be like, shit, we have one guy like this around us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very relatable.
I think those are the kinds
those
of
the
films
kind of movies you would
that,
recommend.
Yeah, I would like to people to watch, because they don't know, they're not very aware of it.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Because the movies that people who don't, like, for example, you don't watch too many Tamil movies, right?
Yeah.
And you said you watch the occasional Rajinikanth movie.
Yeah.
The thing is, those are the movies that actually get that much advertising, where people from other, like, people don't really watch Tamil movies can see.
Correct.
And now, like, slowly it's picking up, because all these small films are tying up with Amazon Prime, so people from people
don't
watch
it. Yeah.
But they really need to watch these films, and I'm trying to do my best to, like, let them know.
We'll also put up the names of the movies that Kishan mentioned on the show notes, because there's quite a few. Awesome. Tell us about your work at Fully Filmy. I know you review movies, but there's a bunch of other things, because I think this is a young organization, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
Though they have like a huge subscriber base.
My bosses who founded Fully Filmy, they're three friends, and I think they're all 28, 29 years old. So those are the oldest people we have. So there's a lot of young talent around.
Just give us a rundown on what your day looks like. And what the organization does as such at the mega level.
Right, okay. So I'll talk about the organization first.
Yeah.
We are a merchandising company. So we do film merchandise like t-shirts and mugs and bags and all that.
Yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah, so that was the main business. Fully Filmy was started as a merchandising company. And 1 year down, they wanted to start a YouTube channel, which is why they started the Fully Filmy YouTube channel. And initially we did reviews and interviews and all. Now we're adapted to a few more things. We do podcasts and we do listicles, and we're opening up our content basically.
What are listicles?
Basically like top 10, top 15 stuff. So we do movie based listicles and all. So
we're
just trying to explore other concepts that we can deal with. My job at Fully Filmy is we have a video team where four, five of us right now.
Yeah.
So we don't have fixed jobs. If I'm in front of the camera, for example, I do a show called FF Rewind every Monday, where I talk about, for example, top 10 films. I spoke about movies with the best female characters, best directors, best films, all of that. So I talk about a lot of stuff like that. Yeah. So that happens every Monday. So that's when I'm in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Thursdays, we do our podcast. And
yeah.
Friday is the movie reviews, because movies release on Fridays.
Correct.
So those 3 days. Otherwise, I shoot videos. So if a celebrity comes over for an interview, I have to like shoot the video. And if my editors are really held up with work, then I'll probably do like a rough cut and give it to them, so it'll be easier. But that
yeah.
doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
But
rough cut of the script?
Of the video.
Of the
video.
Okay,
so
okay.
if we get the raw footage, and if they're busy with something else, I'll just do like one cut where I remove the things that are not necessary and give it to them. So they'll fine tune
yeah.
it and they'll add
and so,
all
so there's a lot of editing skills you've picked up along the way?
Yeah, I used to edit before,
okay.
but I still can't edit like really well now. I can just remove portions that aren't necessary and
yeah.
then they'll
like,
do all the...
Like movie maker stuff, but little more.
Okay, not that bad, but
okay.
I can do
oh,
like
shit.
Some stuff.
I thought I was good at editing, but I know how to use Movie Maker. It took me a while to get my hand at that. And
right.
something I've always wanted to pick up, right? Editing.
Editing.
It's a cool skill to have.
Exactly.
You want to say a story, you want some background noise, and you want footage to be clipped together. Something that I'm always working on. But yeah, more help later offline on that.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, I think an editor, the most important thing is you need a sense of how, you need a sense of the flow, right?
Yeah.
I don't know too much about the technical aspect, as in, I know I can edit and I can like put in transitions and rotate or whatever, but then I can't do the really cool stuff. Like
yeah.
I don't even know what how
yeah,
to do
yeah,
this
yeah.
cool
but
stuff.
You know it. You know it when you see it.
Yeah, I know what they need to do for something to happen. But like in college, I used to edit my short films
yeah.
and all of that. So that was that level of basic
yeah.
flow I can understand, because I watch a lot of movies. I know how it goes.
Yeah.
But otherwise, adding a lot of stuff, like our editors, there's a lot of like animation that they do in the video. All that I can't do.
Yeah.
That's something that I'm totally like zero in. So that I don't.
Okay.
So I do like the rough cuts and give it to them. And we come up, basically we do film promotion. So right, if the film is releasing, we do a video for the film. So in that case, I write scripts and all. Now we have a person who joined us called Ranjit. He does the scripting work for us now.
Okay.
So my job is that. And eventually we have a social media team that works on brand promotion. So I work with them from time to time. With like live, we do live videos every Wednesday. So live videos with them, or if they need help shooting a video or putting like a video meme or something like that, then we'll brainstorm for ideas. No,
yeah.
So I work with all the departments except the design team, because I know nothing about designs and they have their shit sorted. They're
yeah, for
they're
sure.
like a really good
cool
young
team.
So I don't get involved with their business. So
got
that's
it.
How it is.
Cool. I've known you to be. Okay, at least from what I've seen on Facebook and Instagram, which is where I think most people can connect with you. I know you to be a great producer of content. I mean, not only in terms of quality, but in terms of quantity as well. How do you
right.
keep up? Like, how do you come out with video after video? Is it effortless? Does it require more time? Or is it something that you mindfully do?
You're talking about fully filming, right?
Just generally, right? The kind of... online and offline, like at work and outside of work, how do you keep that balance up? How do you keep coming out with short films? How do you keep coming out with, even in college, for example? Like,
yeah.
I know you were always doing short films,
right,
et cetera, et cetera.
In college,
what's the motivation? Like,
right. So in college, I used to write a lot.
Yeah.
It was like a thing we had to do for college. So I used to make it a point that I write something every day.
Yeah.
Now I've lost that.
What
that
did you write?
List to, like short films. And
okay.
We used to have a lot of assignments, basically.
Yeah.
Like for script writing, we had to write a lot of scripts. So it was just in me that every day I'd wake up, either I went for afternoon college, so I'd either write something in the morning or I'd go to college and come back and write something about my day. Even if it didn't matter, like I just write what my day was
nice.
Like. I wouldn't put it anywhere, but
yeah.
just because I didn't want to lose the interest to just write something every
Correct.
Day. So that was one thing, but now I've completely lost that skill to write, because I lack a lot of motivation right now, because I've done a lot of other things right now, and my mind, my time is basically consumes all my time. So I
yeah.
don't have the time to sit down at the end of the day,
yeah.
right? I just want to go and sleep.
Yeah,
so that's
yeah, yeah.
how it is. But in Fully Filmy, we have like a team. So when we have brainstorming sessions, we come up with ideas and we write it down. But my ideas haven't been that great in Fully Filmy. Like the ones that I've pitched.
Yeah.
At least off late, because I've been doing a lot of other stuff. My
yeah.
mind, I can't put my mind
when you say
to
other stuff, you mean.
One thing. Like for example, if there's a movie that I need to watch and review.
Yeah.
My mind will be like, oh shit, okay, I have to do this, I
yeah,
have to do
yeah.
that. And my listicles, there's a lot of research that goes behind it.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
if
yeah.
I do, for example, we did a podcast about best Diwali releases
yeah.
on for Diwali. And I had to find out dates of every Diwali since 1960.
Oh, shit.
And then go back and after before like 1980s, there's no clear idea about when films released.
Yeah.
So I had to go and find out. There's a lot of research that goes behind every listicle. So that usually takes most of my time, and at least one day we dedicate to that. Otherwise, we'll have to think of ideas, we'll have to come up. And we do it. Well, right now, we used to have a person called Abhishek who did interviews for us. But he's not with us anymore. So we do interviews with people. We do like concept interviews. So there's no VJ on screen. We just have like one frame and we give them games, like activities to do. So we need to come up with ideas for that, which we don't want it to be too out of the way. It has to be very relevant to the film they're doing. And
at the same time,
to keep
creative.
And keep them engaged. And we have to think about how we can package it later. So that basically keeps me busy at work.
Yeah.
So I don't really... the thing is, before I joined Fully Filming, I had a YouTube channel of my own where I just put up random videos. I did cooking videos and all that. It was really shit cooking. So
those are extremely funny. We'll discuss that.
Yeah,
actually.
So when it came to producing content for that, it was very simple because I had a GoPro and I just recorded the randomest of shit.
Yeah.
And guys, if you guys have seen the videos, what you've seen is like a very polished version of what happened. There's a lot more shit that goes up which I've edited out.
Yeah.
So I used to do very free-flowing content then because I didn't... Fully Film as a brand stands for something, and they have film related content. They have a quality which we need to match for our videos to come out on the channel.
Yeah.
There it was just me, so I didn't give a shit about it.
You had the freedom and you didn't care. Fair enough.
So here I'm more focused. Like I know the pros and cons of what happened, and I think the 1 year I've worked there, I've understood how YouTube works. And the thing is, I personally like looking at the demographics, looking at the age group that sees our videos, which gender watches our videos more, what the percentage is.
And YouTube gives you a detailed
YouTube gives us detailed statistics of how our videos do and all.
Yeah.
So I like having a look over again. Like right now, I think if suppose we have 60% male viewers, 40% female viewers, content that we need to increase the female base and...
you make more targeted videos.
One thing which we have noticed off late is... YouTube gives you a statistic. Gives you statistics of where they watch your video. So like India, on India, US. No. So what we do is we try to find a time zone that matches all the major countries that we cater to.
Wow.
So if I put out a video at say 5 o'clock, I'll know okay this is when people wake up here. This is when people are done with office here. It's lunch here.
Yeah.
So we need to find
the ideal time.
And now YouTube thing is so easy. You press a bell icon and then you get a notification instantly when someone puts out a video.
Correct.
So you need to know what time will be perfect for them to
leave it there hanging or just swipe everything out. And
exactly.
Nobody watches anything.
So it's very difficult. Like some videos which you really put your heart and soul into will not do well. Some video which you just randomly do like impulsively will work out really well.
Yeah.
So you can't really judge that space.
Yeah, timing is can be a piss off.
Yeah.
Cool. This is a question I ask most people. So this is a redo. But it would be good to have your thoughts on. If you could put anything on a massive billboard for the world to see, what would it be? I like Jim Rohn saying that you're the average of the 5 people you spend most time with. A famous athlete, I think Usain Bolt, says that the world does not owe you a thing. Just what do you think if you had a personal billboard for the world to see, what would you put on it?
I think it would say just calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing I've kept telling myself in life, because I have the tendency to overthink a lot. So if I go for a shoot, my mind be like, okay, so I go for this shoot. What if I can't find the place? What if I go there and I'm late? What if they don't like what I do? I can't redo it. I need to do that. So my mind... I hate when things are awkward or when people don't get what they expect from me. That's the worst feeling. That's the biggest fear I have.
Yeah.
So I tend to overthink a lot. And one thing everyone told me is just calm down. Like you don't need to overthink. And I think that's one thing that everybody needs to do because we get so nervous.
True. So true.
And the thing is, for example, if you're hosting this podcast today and I'm sure you would have been like, okay, fine, I need to at least make sure he's comfortable, all that.
Yeah.
Tomorrow when you go for a podcast, you're going to be really chilled out. But the person who's, suppose I'm going to interview you, I'll be like, oh shit, he has to do this, he has to do that.
Yeah,
I think everyone needs to just calm down and make sure you're on the same page. That's that's all that's important. Like when I go to interview celebrities, I'll be like, oh shit, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. He's going to be so, I have to ask him questions. What if he doesn't answer this question and won't lead to that question, all that.
True.
I'll go sit down and they'll be really calm and they'll be really friendly. And... that's something that I'd be like, once it's over, I'd be like, oh shit, dude, I didn't even have to worry about it.
True.
I think it would just say, just calm the fuck down. That's the need of the art.
Definitely something that I need to work on too. Like personally, I'm a very finicky person. Like everything has to be not perfect, but I'm always like overthinking. What if this scenario? What if that scenario? I don't plan for them, but I just keep imagining
exactly,
them.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I'm not a person who will plan for A, B, and C, but I know all the scenarios, and then I'll be hyperventilating.
Exactly. Right? So that's the end. When I joined work fully for me, in the beginning, now I know, okay, I know how things work. But when I joined, if I go half a day without work, I get so worked up. Like, come, I used to have a friend called Gautam, who used to work with me. Like, Gautam, come, we need to do something, do some video.
Yeah.
Shoot the video, it'll be shit, and they'll just reject it.
Yeah.
But now I've realized that I used to get so worked up, like, oh, I need to put content. But there's a certain, I know that this is very cliche again, but then it's like, not like time heals, because I don't believe that time heals, but there's a certain time for everything.
Yeah.
Like, if you're free right now, if you're doing this podcast right now, I mean, okay, I'm not thinking about, oh shit, like I could be doing this, I should have done that.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, this is the time for this. Yeah. Just be in the moment and do it. That's one thing that I've learned, especially from my relationship, because love has screwed me over in my life once.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think
we should definitely talk about that
episode 2.
Love requires a lot more conversation, but yeah.
But you know, I'm very open about my personal life.
Yeah.
But I think that's one more thing that I could have definitely played out better if I knew that I should just calm down and there's a time for
everything.
So yeah, I think, fuck, oh shit.
Interesting.
Like, it's a different topic altogether.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure this podcast will have so many listens and read, like, maybe people will recommend that you come back on the show, so we'll have you back again to talk about.
Oh yeah, sure. There'll be a lot of backlash for my love discussions.
Recently I saw you get called for a TED talk. Would you like to discuss that, A? And if yes, what was the theme of the talk?
So it wasn't a main event. It was like a small sub event that they had. It was like a mentorship program. So they wanted me to talk about kids with dreams. That was the topic. And I personally have been affected a lot because I'm too young. I'm 20 years old.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when I go and I tell people I'm 20 years old, first, they don't take me seriously.
Yeah.
They just think I'm some kid who doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
And if I go for chance, they'll be like, oh shit, you're too young, probably, like, come 2 years later, 3 years later.
Yeah.
People always look at age as a factor to judge you. So when they call me to talk about age, I personally can talk to a crowd, but I can never be serious or like preachy. It's never been something that I do. But when they told me it's about, like, you're going to be talking to, like, kids between, like, the ages of 13 and ages 13 and 17, I thought, okay, might as well go on. I wasn't even serious. I was literally doing something like stand-up comedy there, just coming back to the first question. But the thing was, I do believe that age doesn't matter. If I go for a preview show today, there'll be so many people who do, like, written reviews. Not who'll just be like, Popani, front look, I end up watching movies in the first row almost every time.
Yeah, because they just think that
they don't take me seriously.
Yeah.
I think that's something that should change. Obviously, I hope it changes. But it was a topic that was very personal, and I could connect with it a lot. So I went.
Did you bring up this topic, or did they?
No, that was the topic of
So it's very coincidental.
Yeah. So they had three sessions. The first one was basically about ideating, for how to come up with ideas. And there was one about how to structure it. And I think my part was about how to present your ideas.
Yeah.
So I basically spoke about how you should speak out and not keep ideas within yourselves and try to, you know, be more vocal about what you think. And the second part of my speech was basically about, like, following your dreams and age not being a factor.
Awesome.
So
how did that go, though? Are you happy with your...
I was blabbering, but then I just felt... I didn't even know if I made any sense.
Yeah.
Because I don't usually... Sometimes I don't think when I speak. I just talk about whatever I feel.
Was this a live audience that you had to talk to?
Yeah, it was a live audience. So we had around, I think, 70 kids.
Yeah.
And they were all, like, I don't think I can call them kids, like, 13 to 17 year olds.
And from school, obviously.
Yeah, from schools around. Yeah. So that came from a mixture of schools.
Okay.
So I spoke to them, and I didn't want to be very preachy. So I just told them about a few things. Like, I always like to speak about rejections, because I think when you get rejected, you feel like you're useless. So that's not the right path for you. But that isn't like always true.
Yeah.
Sometimes rejections tell you how to do it better. That's what I think about it. So I spoke about rejections, because that's the age where you get rejected a lot.
Yeah.
Not that we don't get rejected now. We get rejected more often now. But that's one thing I spoke about. And the other thing I spoke about was not listening to people around you when they tell you not to do something. Because, okay, obviously you need to listen to them to some extent, but there are a lot of people who, like, when I joined YouTube, they were like, are you sure you want to do YouTube? It's something that doesn't pay well.
Yeah.
It's something that might not work. But trust me, I'm not saying it's the best paying job, but you make enough money to keep. For a 20-year-old, I make enough money to handle my expenses.
Wow.
And definitely today, if it is a very good platform for you to voice out your opinions, like the other reviewers are out there, except for a very few, are people who are slightly older, so their understanding of cinema is different. My reviews are very technical, because in college I had this professor called Eugene that I really, really looked up to. And this one thing that he told me was, you can't blame the story of a film.
Guys, a professor in Loyola that he looked up to, it's a rare mention.
I'm sure every Viscom student from Loyola would definitely say, he's very nice. And thing is, he's like us. His mindset, the way he looks at cinemas, is very nice. So, what he told me was, like what he told our class, was you can't look at a story and tell the director, you should have done this, you should have done that. There is no right and wrong when it comes to filmmaking. But there is right and wrong when it comes to technically making a film.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at cinematography as such, there is, you know that there, this certain thing is a mistake in cinematography. Okay, for example, when there is, if there is a shot of both of us and there is light coming from a place where there is no source. Like, if there's light coming from the bottom, obviously, you know, the light can't come from the bottom. Like, light can come through a window or it can come from a tube light. So there are technical mistakes that you can make in a film, editing-wise too. If the shot ends abruptly, or musically, when usually when it has beats, right? There's four beats and it ends abruptly. So that technically you can find fault with content, but you can't find fault with content on like a story level or screenplay level. You can tell them, okay, maybe if it was like this, it would have been better.
Yeah.
But you can't call it wrong.
Correct.
But with regard to cinematography, there are like, there's a 180 degree rule which happens. There's a lot of concepts that cinematography deals with, which you can point out that saying that it's wrong. That's what I focus on in my reviews. I don't tell, like, I try to be as passive as I can, because I know they've obviously gone through
a lot to make the film.
Some films we obviously bash because they talk about stuff which is either really misogynistic or really insensitive. Then I make it a point that I be very rude to them.
Yeah.
For example, there was this movie called Moteshwar Keteshwar that released, and we did a 10-minute review for that. Usually we do 2-minute reviews. We finish the reviews quickly. So there was a very insensitive comment about rape in the film.
Yeah.
So we took it up and we bashed the film. Like, it was really sad what we did. We would never do it to another film, but we felt that they needed to know that this is not something you make jokes about. So that is one
current
thing.
Awesome.
What is the question again I've got? I basically spoke about like kids, how they need to find their path and not to listen to people when they tell you that it's impossible. At least give it a shot. Put one foot out. If it doesn't work, you can always put it back here. So
awesome.
That's one thing.
That's, yeah. Age doesn't correspond to wisdom or talent, and I'm a true believer of that. Like, the fact that people think that wisdom and talent is directly proportionate to age is a very, very misunderstood concept.
Yeah.
And then the young talent has to like wait for a particular age to really prove merit or get a foot in the door. That's ridiculous to me. Things should definitely
change. And I think in today's generation, there's so many more things that you can explore. For example, I think there are these two kids, I don't know, I forgot their names. They have a YouTube channel where they basically unbox stuff. So they buy toys and they have a video of them unboxing it and checking it out.
That's so cool.
They have 10 times the subscriber base that we have as a brand.
Yeah.
And imagine they bought like 7 years old, 8 years old, and they've still figured out, they've already figured out what they want to do. So I think everything has an audience. You just need to find them.
Find yours,
It's just as simple as that.
Talking about the recent, I thought I'd actually end this podcast, but because I'm liking the way this is going, so I just want your thoughts on Padmavat. What do you think, and movies like Padmavat, right? Movies that generate a lot of controversy, releases are delayed, the script is cut, there's like random people who get famous because of this, like the Karni Sena, nobody even knew about them 6 months ago.
Right.
What's your take on how this has turned out and how the CVFC should go on this?
Okay, so firstly, there are two ways this can happen. When they announce the name of the film, they just assume that there's something wrong about them and start fighting, which I think is just what happened.
Yeah, they didn't even watch the movie.
Yeah.
They just like start protesting.
Right,
like,
and the other thing is what happened in Nersal, where they released the movie and then the BJP thought that it was offensive that they spoke about GST like that and then called for a ban or removal of that scene.
Yeah.
So I think both are wrong, first of all. It's cinema, they can talk about whatever they want to. It's for not entertainment as such, but there's a freedom. We have the freedom to express what we think. So with regard to Padmavat, I saw the film and I thought it's a visually, it's like amazing film. One of the best visually made films I've seen.
Yeah.
Actually, visually made, what am I saying? But like visuals were extraordinary.
Yeah.
But the story kind of lacked the thing because
it's
3 hours long. So they need something to keep us seated. So that's okay.
Back to the point.
But what I felt was, as someone from Chennai who has no idea about Rajputs or Khiljis or any idea about what happened, I think it was fine. There is a certain role that Sati plays in the film,
yeah,
which I think would offend a few people who aren't really open-minded, but they had a lot of disclaimers in the beginning. For example, they had a disclaimer which said, this movie is not, we're not telling you that this is exactly the event that happened, this is inspired from a certain book, which is a work of fiction. And they also said that the costumes, the languages, the dance forms, everything they've used in the film aren't exactly what that aren't exactly what happened then. So they've played their game very safe. And I think it was unnecessary for them to move to a place where they said they'll burn down theaters if you release the film. I think that is violence. You should,
yeah,
that should not be encouraged. If you have problem with content, for example, I make a film and I'm talking about your community or your friends and you want to, you have a problem with me, I think it should be very, very, they should be very diplomatic about it. Like, probably sit down and have a conversation,
yeah,
and come up with like a mutual, like, they should be satisfied. That's all I think about.
Yeah.
That I think should happen. Burning theaters, taking violence up and all is too much. Like,
too much.
With Mersal, I don't know if you, do you watch Mersal?
I haven't watched that.
So
either.
They had two problems.
Yeah.
One they said was they mentioned facts which weren't right about GST. And the other thing is they spoke about, I think the government not doing anything or something like that. Basically, they started calling Vijay Joseph Vijay. That's his actual name. He's a Christian. They started pointing it out as if it was a mistake or that he's someone else.
Wow.
So I think you stoop down to that level is sad. If you go tell the makers, you said this so-and-so about GST, it is, to an extent, I agree with them, because you can't say facts about the country or about
the movie painted the GST in bad light. That's what I'm
basically saying. What they said in the movie was Singapore charges 7% GST or something like that, but the healthcare is free. I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly what he said, but something like that, which wasn't true. It was a fact about Singapore, which wasn't true.
Okay.
So if they sat down and said, listen, you said so on this fact, it's not true.
And the BJP protested this because it was a Singapore-based?
No, no, because they're talking about the country, right? They're saying that GST, we're not, no, they said when Singapore can give free healthcare,
oh, okay,
when we are paying so much GST, why do we still have to pay so much
got
for
it.
Healthcare?
Got
just
it.
Something like that,
yeah,
which they said.
Yeah.
So obviously as the ruling party, they would have a problem with it. So when they brought it up, it became like a big issue. They started calling him Joseph Vijay. Fans got paranoid. The BJP supporters got paranoid. It became a big issue. The movie did extremely well because of the controversy, but it was unnecessary.
Yeah.
If they'd gone to the director and said, you've said so and so, this fact about Singapore and India, which isn't true, remove it. The director, okay, they would have had some, they would have had a few negotiations, but he eventually removed it if he knew that so much of a backlash was going to follow. But I think if they should be more diplomatic about it, that's all I hope. And the CBFC, first of all, again, I've already mentioned this in one of my videos. They are the Central Board of Film Certification. They are supposed to certify films.
Yeah.
If they have a problem with something, give it an A certificate.
Yeah.
Even tell people not to watch
people.
The film.
Yeah.
Yeah, warn people. Even
yeah.
Go up to their houses, ring the bell, tell them not to watch the film. It's fine.
Yeah.
But you cannot ask them to cut content.
Yeah.
Padmavat had 40 cuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Uttar Punjab had... I don't even know how many.
Yeah, but I thought things would change after this Pralhad Nani guy went and Prasoon Joshi came in. But
yeah.
It just hasn't happened, right? I don't know.
But again, with Pralhad, the difference between Uttar Punjab and Padmavat was Uttar Punjab, the people didn't have a problem. The people of Punjab didn't say the movie was bad. Pralhad, basically the government of Punjab thought, okay, we can't show Punjab like this, and they found a problem with the film.
Yeah.
Padmavat, the censor board was fine with the
yes.
film. The people from the community got offended. So I think I'm not calling them CBFC, I'm calling them the Central Board of Film Certification should
yeah.
certify films and not impose like cuts or bans or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think that should be something that
absolutely,
should
totally
happen.
Agree. I feel like Pralhad himself has like multiple trolls on the internet and that's just ridiculous.
That guy made Judy 2. What was that? They should have cut the entire film. There was
cut
so,
the entire film.
It's like I'm telling you not do a podcast and I go outside and do a podcast. That's
yeah.
not how
yeah,
it
yeah.
works.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Such hypocrites.
Yeah, double standard. Seriously, I didn't like that move.
Yeah, like I remember some ridiculous things like Harry Met Sejal had the word sex mentioned a few.
Huh.
20-30 times, and he said if you get the count of the word mentioned down to 15, we'll pass the movie. Like this is just one example of how
ridiculous. Yeah, Uttar Punjab, they want to remove Punjab from the title. Just
yeah.
And like for example, we have had examples in Tamil industry where you know Madras Cafe.
Yeah.
The movie?
Yeah.
I don't think Madras
yeah.
Cafe was allowed to be released.
No, it wasn't.
Here.
I watched it on a DVD that I bought off a pirated DVD
right.
store.
We don't do that.
Though
anymore.
I shouldn't. I have something
so,
to discuss later.
Okay, if the government has a problem with it, okay, fine. They have some serious complicated issues. They that is wrong too, but they take a stand as a government.
Yeah.
Punjab should have just done that. They would have said, okay, don't release the movie in Punjab. But telling them to remove the scenes, remove Punjab, all that
was ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Cool, I guess that's a wrap. Thanks for your Dub Smashes, your YouTube videos, the 24/7 entertainment that you come out with Fully Filmy and outside. I appreciate you and applaud you for that. I think fans do as well. Thanks for speaking today. I'm sure a bunch of your fans and listeners will be excited to listen to this and resonate with it. Thanks for joining us, Kishan.
Right, okay, thank you. We shake hands even though there's no video, but
oh, yeah.